Well, we say chief ministers debate, but it could be the start of a process. We don't know. We do have the two contenders who have put their names forward so far. The new administration, of course, under a new chief minister. And the selection of that new chief minister will be taking place in the next week or so. The process to select the seventh person to hold that title. The two candidates who have come forward so far, publishing their proposed policies, Alf Cannon, the Eyre and Michael member and Treasury Minister, has described this, and I quote, a chance for a new Council of Ministers to take a more open, focused and better informed approach. And Alex Allenson, Ramsey and the Education Minister, and he says, and I quote, I've seen the way government can work and the way it doesn't, and it can do better. So, as you will gather, both candidates have criticisms of the last administration. Well, let's now talk to the gentleman involved. And can I ask you first a fairly simplistic question? I'll start with you, Dr. Allenson. Why do you want to be chief minister? Is it because of altruistic reasons? Because you want to serve the community? Is it for personal ambition? Why?
Well, first of all, John, I think anyone who puts their hat in the ring to be chief minister has to be absolutely committed to the people of the Isle of Man. He or she has to give up a huge amount to come to this. It's not personal ambition, no. If I wanted personal ambition, I would have gone back to being a GP partner in Ramsey Group Practice. This is a chance to make a difference right across the island for all the people of the Isle of Man at a time when our island is faced with some really major problems, numerous crises, numerous threats, but also a time for real opportunity to build on the sense of community and the sense of the way people have come together over the last 18 months to actually build something far better for our people.
I noticed in your general election manifesto you said, vote for hope.
Yeah.
Do we need hope?
We do. I mean, we are faced with a whole series of crises. You'll know that we've got a health crisis looming. We've got a COVID crisis that is still ongoing, a social care crisis, a housing crisis, a population crisis, a climate crisis. We've got a mental health crisis, a drugs crisis, a suicide crisis, a poverty crisis,
an economic crisis,
and also a crisis of trust in the government, both here and around the world. And we need to face that, and we need to do that with optimism and hope to build back something better. This is not a time for austerity. This is not a time for cuts. This is not a time for doing things the way we've been doing all along. I think we need change, and we need to do that by bringing everyone along, particularly the public, but also members of Tynwald.
I have to ask you, Mr. Cannon, as well, personal ambition or altruistic?
No, I've been very clear with my constituents in this election that, you know, I will play whatever part is needed within government to deliver the outcomes, the best outcomes for them, both as my constituents, but also more broadly the island. I did say in my manifesto that I would work with like-minded MHKs to set out a strong plan for this island, that such plan to tackle the key critical issues of the day, but also, as you'll see from the manifesto that I've delivered as Chief Minister, to build a more secure and sustainable island, but also a vibrant island. And in coming together after the election and discussing those issues with a number of MHKs, I believe there is that collective will to deliver. And, you know, as it happens, you know, I believe I've got the ability to harness that collective will to deliver the best island plan for the island, but also to tackle the critical issues of the day in a more defined and targeted manner than has been undertaken in the last 5 years.
This is the second time you've had a crack at this job, isn't it? So there must be ambition in there. You must have wanted to be Chief Minister.
Well, on both occasions, I feel a number of those issues, I felt that I had the right policy and view in terms of how to tackle those issues. You know, I've had 5 years' experience as the Treasury Minister now. I've determined and set out a policy, financial fiscal policies for this island to both bring finances under control, but to deliver better economic outcomes, to deliver better outcomes for our families, and to bring targeted investment in infrastructure across this island to try and deliver better key critical infrastructure for the people of the island.
Can I just go back to Dr. Allenson and the subject of a popularly elected chief minister? I know in 2011, Mr. Cannon, you actually said you'd give your support to that idea. Mr. Allenson, do you think it's a good idea?
In terms of how we judge and how we elect the chief minister, whether you know whoever that is, what I want is something that works, that achieves effective government. Now, I was involved, one of my first things when I got in 2016, sitting through a committee which looked at the Lord Lisvain report. I have yet to find or be presented with options that would actually achieve what we want, which is a chief minister who could lead the members of Tynwald forward and create a government that would actually be effective and would be responsive in a representative democracy to the people who put them
is
there.
Is that coming through a vote in the Keys, though, and not through a popularly elected? Well, again, a popularly elected, yeah. A beauty contest, would it not have the same backing?
Well, a popularly elected vote, I would have been chief minister in 2016 because I topped the poll. I had no experience of government. I had no experience of being a minister. If that's what people want, fair enough. But what we have at the moment is a system whereby the chief minister has to have the trust and has to have the experience to lead all the other members of Tynwald. Now, I have got an open mind in terms of a way we can progress that. And what we've seen over the last 5 years is an evolution of our democracy. For instance, the election for chief minister, which hopefully will be concluded on Tuesday, will just be amongst the MHKs, the elected members who represent their constituents. It won't be the MLCs for one of the first times. So we will constantly change the way we structure government. But I've yet to see a system whereby we could have a popularly elected chief minister that I think would work, but I'm completely open to suggestions of how that would go, particularly if we, and I hope we do, move to electronic voting for the next general election.
Mr. Cannon, you wanted a popularly elected chief minister in 2011, or you said so in your manifesto. Are you still of that thought?
Well, I think the important thing today's issue, John, is really about bringing together or putting in place a chief minister who can harness the collective will of Tynwald, but also deliver for the people of this island. You know, throughout the last 6 weeks of the general election campaign, it was clear from the views on the doorstep there were a number of areas where the government was falling short, and there were a number of areas where people had concern about how the government was operating. So that's why in my manifesto I've set out very clearly how this can be a more transparent and open government, how we can engage better with members of Tynwald, how we can actually engage better with members of the public. And I've done that through policies that include bringing forward, for ministers to bring forward their reports, their annual reports in terms of how government and what their department has done in the last 12 months, but also what they're going to do in the next 12 months, how an all-island conference, an Isle Expo, a political Isle Expo, engaging members of the public annually can work in terms of better engagement, but also, and also how government can work more effectively across government, across departments to deliver.
Can I just draw you back to this popularly elected thing?
And when it comes then for to other issues around how we can improve ourselves in terms of being more accountable, but how also the public can better vote for and involve themselves with policy. Now, as it stands today with the chief minister process, I would suggest we are moving towards a position where a chief minister should be presenting their manifesto for public approval against a framework that also protects the public from a chief minister becoming all powerful. And that is something that can be delivered. But John, let's not cut across here. We've spent far too long on this island debating intricacies that don't actually deliver for the people on the ground. And I want to be part of a government and lead a government that is actually focused on delivery. So we get better roads, better infrastructure, that we tackle COVID properly, and we have open and clear communication.
At the end of the day, with 13 voting for a chief minister, you presumably will vote for yourself, your nominator will vote for you. That just leaves 11 members. Yeah. Of the House of Keys, basically deciding who will be the big voice in Comyn.
That's correct, but those 11 members are representatives of their constituents. What we've tried to do in this election, and Alf and I have both done, is present a manifesto that's gone out on the media. This is one of four hustings that we're doing over the next 24 hours, including three public ones where we can take the views of the public involved. We are trying to increase the access to the chief minister election, and I declared before the election that I was going to stand for this role if I got the opportunity. So as I said, our democracy will constantly evolve, but we have to have effective government to actually confront some of the big changes we need to make.
Can I just go on to the role of chief minister? I mean, if you looked at a sporting analogy, are we talking about a player manager? Are we talking about a captain? Are we talking about a manager? What role does the chief minister take when they're sitting in Tynwald, in Comyn?
Well, as I said, I mean, you know, one has to accept this is not an autocratic position. This is one in which there is
a strong element of
collective responsibility, of collective determination of policy. And that policy is not just the beholden of the Council of Ministers. That policy shaping should also be something that involves those 24 voices who are predominantly independent and should have a strong say in terms of both policy performance but also delivery for Timor. So the manifesto I've delivered is setting out how that can be improved. But I see this as a role of harnessing the collective political strengths, the collective political will, setting firm policy and then ensuring that we are holding ourselves accountable for delivery. And I do see the role as one that is prepared to stand up and take responsibility and lead on ensuring that we are getting delivery. But around that, you know, we also have to draw out the best of the ideas. And you can do that by having, you know, a broad base around you and by having a very listening approach to how to solve the
critical
issues.
You've got these disparate people drawn together. And from that, you have produced a working council of ministers. It must be very difficult to get the right people there to do that job.
Not really, no. I mean, using your analogy, I think it is more of a player manager, because you need to know what you're doing. You need to have the experience, but also you need to lead, but also allow other people to take responsibility and lead forwards. I mean, I thought one of the failures of the last administration, I'm afraid, was not having a reshuffle halfway through. We've now got 11 new members.
What would be the point of a reshuffle?
To bring people forward. We've got 11 new members. We had 12 new members in 2016. As the previous Chief Minister, Alan Bell, said, there is a deficit of historical knowledge in terms of how government works. What we need is to bring all Timwald members through, to get them involved in the workings of government, to get them involved in actually developing the skills they need to lead in the future if they want to. And I think that is achievable, but you need to bring people along, be open and transparent, but also to be inclusive in the way you select both members of COMIN, but also how you bring people into departments or listen to their views through other means.
Well, that brings us on to Mr. Cannon. Would you bring in cabinet ministers that may prove boisterous, if I put it that way? If I can just say, a bit of grit in an oyster sometimes produces a pearl. You were someone who was brought in basically from the backbenchers, Kate Beecroft as well, because Mr. Quayle saw potential in you as a minister and you've proved your worth. Would you look to people who you think might be a bit awkward in COMIN but could do a good job for it?
Well, I think you've got to listen and work with a range of diverse opinions and be prepared to listen to people and find the right outcomes. Let me just take you back as to how, you know, I view that being achieved. I mean, clearly, in the last 18 months plus, we've had to deal with the COVID crisis. So right at the very, very beginning of that, government was struggling to really determine how best to cohesively bring the island together, if you like, both in tackling the health requirements and reaction,
but also
the economic one, and you know, quickly realizing from my perspective that things were very disparate, spread over two really key departments. You know, bringing those two departments together, working with six very different MHKs to shape out the critical delivery then around the salary support scheme, the MIRA that was delivered, the various business other support mechanisms that were put in place. And that was done by working intensely, but by listening to everybody's perspective and really coming together with a collective view of what needed to be done. And when we brought those schemes out and the way they were delivered, I believe, you know, supported thousands of jobs and families across this island. And then we subsequently repeated that exercise by forming the Economic Recovery Group, again with a mixed views from various MHKs brought together to help deliver
the best policies for the island. You've got a strong personality, you've got a military background. There must have been times around the COMIN table when you cast your eyes skywards and thought, no, this is not the way. In those occasions, well, did you just go along with the thinking?
You're always there to argue your case, but also you have to recognise in politics that you're not always right, or your way is not always the best way, and that by taking on board others' opinions, that sometimes you have to give ground. And I think, you know, as an island, when we have the political system that we do, whilst you don't always want to settle for consensus every time, you know, there is a time, particularly when you're in a leadership position, where other people's opinions do matter. You have to respect the basis of the vote on, in terms of how they've been put into either the House of Keys and then subsequently, you know, what role they're playing in a council of ministers. But ultimately, in any of these situations, you have to listen to other people's opinions and strike the right balance. So it's not always your way as the right way.
Mr. Quayle lost a couple of ministers, obviously, along on the travels through the 5 years, etc. You presumably were in agreement with that, those decisions?
Well, I think there's obviously, you know, times when you're not always in agreement. But, you know, partly, you know, I've set out in the manifesto that one, council of ministers should be careful about its role with collective responsibility, that it should consider times when debate can be better enhanced by taking critical issues onto the floor of Timor. But you've also got to recognise that there is a responsibility to make progress, and that forming a national government who operate under collective responsibility is the structure in place. I believe it's the correct structure to take us and to continue to take us forward, albeit there are ways that we can enhance that by listening in a greater way to what Tim Ward has to say, and also help listening to Tim Ward in terms of actually shaping the policy decisions.
Dr. Arneson, just talking about your background as a doctor, does that help you as a politician, the ability to listen?
Yes, because it's not listening is underrated. It's active listening. It's actually taking on board other people's opinions. I mean, I think there are lots of misconceptions about actually what goes on in Comen. It is a round table. It is ministers there expressing their views in an open and transparent way, having votes and sometimes losing and sometimes winning, but expressing their views and making sure that those views are taken into account as we develop government policy, and also challenging that policy on a regular basis. So the ability to be able to listen, to take in a huge range of other opinions, huge range of facts, and actually having to juggle that on your feet to decide the best policy and then constantly question it, I think is a skill that I have and a skill that I've developed. But it's a skill that lots of people have who have now come into Tim Ward from different backgrounds. And one of the main things we have to do in terms of choosing the next council of ministers is harness some of the diversity and some of the great ideas and skills we have in the new house.
I actually had a word with Dr. Michelle Hayward, who nominated you, and said, could she choose one word which would describe you and why she nominated you? She used the word progressive. Mr. Cannon, I actually had a word with Claire Barber as well, and she used two words, listening leadership. If I could just ask you, Dr. Arneson, progressive? Are you a progressive? Things are going to change in the next...
I came into politics in 2016 to...
Because certainly your manifesto has a lot
change.
Of ideas in it.
It did. And it did back in 2016. I achieved the vast majority of them. I have more ideas. And again, one of the honours of being elected by the people of Ramsey to represent them is when you get into government, when you get into Tim Ward, you realise there is so much more that can be done and should be done. So, yes, I am progressive because I want to leave this place in a better state than when I came in. But also we have to deal with some serious fallouts after COVID, after Brexit and after everything else that's going to hit this island over the next 5 years.
Do we have times for things like, and I'll quote you, I will reclassify cannabis as a Class C drug immediately as a step to decriminalisation?
Absolutely.
Do we have time for things
Absolutely.
Like that?
If you read the Chief Constable's report, he has major reservations, major fears about the increase in violent crime, which is fueled by drug stealing. If we are going to address that, we have to accept that the war on drugs is unwinnable. We have to accept that the only progressive drug policy is to legalise cannabis, to crack down on drug dealers, to equip the constabulary with the resources they need to do that.
But are you able to, as Chief Minister, to declassify cannabis as a Class C? It would have to go to Tim Ward, wouldn't it?
Absolutely, it will go to Tim Ward. Anything the Chief Minister does will go to Tim Ward. But we need to set out a statement of intent in terms of the progressive way I hope to lead the next administration.
What did you learn from the Quayle years? Sitting around that table, Mr. Cannon, you must have looked at some things and thought that could be done a bit differently if I was sitting in that chair at the top of the table.
Well, you know, I set out in a manifesto 5 years ago how I thought things could be done differently. And I've reflected that in...
You think change is necessary?
In this manifesto. I do think change is necessary, both in terms of shaping an island plan that is capable of being delivered for people, both in terms of enhancing the policy and strategy decision-making process, but most importantly, and this is the critical factor, we've spent a lot of time navel-gazing, talking about big ideas in Tynwald, how Tynwald should be reshaped. Lord Lisvain, we've just talked about whether he should vote for a future chief minister. I think critically, though, I want to see a government that really delivers for the people on this island. We talk about all these big issues. We've got gas shortages impacting gas prices. We've got potential food shortages in terms of the supply chains. We've got healthcare issues in terms of recruitment and retention of staff. We've got inflationary issues that are going to come back. So we have got a lot of big issues to tackle. But that does not necessarily mean that we need big government to tackle them. And we need targeted and defined governance. And that is the critical point, John. And that is why, you know, the manifesto laid out really does highlight all the critical issues. It talks about employment, jobs and business. It talks about healthcare. It talks about climate change. But also it underlines that and underpins that with very real progress in terms of what we need to do.
Obviously, the ideas are there. What about communication? People say the government have come out with these big sentences, big paragraphs. We never really get it communicated to us. As to what's going to happen. We have a communication system, comms division, up there in government, and people say, and it's criticised, it's not working. There should be more media face-to-face with ministers. What's your view?
Well, I think some of those issues will be tackled by firm policies around having ministers turn up in Tynwald with annual reports and ensuring that they are properly communicating
both
in terms of
what
they
do, though?
What they've done and what they will do in the future. And in terms of how things are communicated, I do think that we've become rather too modernised in our approach, that government is too controlling in terms of how the media is interacted with. You know, I believe in politics being quite a raw exercise. And also, you know, I've been very clear with Tynwald members when I met them on a one-to-one basis on Wednesday that the sort of Team Tynwald and everything around that is not really the way forward for me. You know, I think we've got to have respectful but honest and truthful debate. That politics without tension does not necessarily lead to progress, and that element that will always remain. And therefore, you know, when you're communicating with people, with the public, there has to be a strong sense that this is from the heart, that this is raw. And you know, having ministers cut off sometimes behind a wall of media, government media, that says you can't communicate unless you say this, I think is wrong. And we need to hear more reality brought into the situation when we're talking both to the public and engagement. And that's why the proposal in the manifesto for an annual conference is one way forward.
Every
but
September,
also,
you feel.
Also, yeah. Why, you know, we should be pushing back in terms of the natural will of our media people to want to keep us boxed
in. Well, the government is naturally, the media is naturally nosy. It always will be. It's its job to be nosy. And if it's being slapped down for being nosy, Dr. Allanson, you can understand why they feel aggrieved.
No, absolutely. I mean, when you look over the last 5 years, the Panorama Paradise Papers was the start of a drift, unfortunately, where government, I think, didn't interact directly with the media in the way it had done. One of the first things I'd like to do is go back to the regular press conferences with the media, which are open, which are televised, where journalists can actually ask the right questions of either the chief minister or government ministers there and then to get the stories and the information they need to then feed on to the population. The media is inherent in any democracy for that liaison between government and the people. And that's why I'm on this show. You say we've got communications division. We have yet to have a permanent director of that communications division. It's still an interim post. We need to actually professionalise what we do and professionalise the way we interact with the media. Because if we don't, we've seen the role of social media stepping into that void and using misinformation to create distrust and fear within our population. That the messages that are there, the truth that is there, has to come out through the mainstream media.
So would you dismantle the comms
No, I wouldn't.
Set up at the moment?
Absolutely not dismantle it. I would professionalise it. I would put the resources in there. And I would actually ask the media, which we have on this island, which actually I think is of a very high quality, to feed back to government what they need. Do they need a press conference on Monday or Friday? Which ministers do they need to see that week? So we can actually get those lines of communication quite clear, because not everyone has a chance to listen to Tynwald Live.
Just speaking of media, Mr. Cannon, the Pandora Papers are now coming out. Obviously, as a member of the media, we all go through the papers, The Guardian and places, and see the Isle of Man doesn't seem to be getting a mention in this. Is that because we are spectacularly successful in what we've been doing in the finance sector? Do we have no cause to worry anymore? Are we cleaner than clean?
We've always been an island, certainly over the last 20 years, that has recognised the importance of the international agenda when it comes to these matters, that we do engage with the relevant bodies, and that we've not been afraid, for example, to plunge in and
did they approach us about
be under scrutiny from people like Moneyval. So I think we've actually made substantial progress on this island in many ways, that matters around base erosion profit shifting, around substance, have been predominantly addressed, and that we have taken huge steps forward. We will have to continue to take those steps forward. Again, that's why in my manifesto I've talked about the importance of our international relations and how I as a chief minister will have to engage properly, should I be elected, in terms of making sure we build and maintain our international relationships, and that includes Westminster, as well as big international bodies such as the OECD and the European Council. In doing so, of course, what we don't want is so much focus from a chief minister on international affairs that they forget about domestic policy at home. And so striking the balance
is absolutely
critical.
Can I just touch upon the beneficial owners register? You say it doesn't really affect us because the companies are not large enough to fall into that area, that we can actually ride this out and actually produce an agreement.
I think I'm talking more about the, I don't know whether you're confusing that with the international, the latest moves on international taxation and the 15%, but beneficial ownership, we've committed to a register of beneficial ownership, and we're delivering on that commitment, and that will apply across the board.
That will be an open register, will it? So anyone can see companies?
That is what we've committed to. It's not what's happening in government, but happening in the private sector.
We're just coming up to 12:30, time whistles past. We're going to take a short break and then come back immediately afterwards with an issue of education, which I'd like to touch upon with you, Dr. Allanson. The Nation Station, Lanx Radio. Welcome back. I'm John Moss. What we're doing at the moment is chatting to the two people who have so far been nominated to be Chief Minister. The process starts on Tuesday when there'll be a vote. If either of these two get 13 votes from their Keys colleagues, then that's it, game over. But if they don't, if they get less say than 11, etc., then new nominations have to be called for, and we don't know who will come out, whether we'll get a dark horse or not. But at the moment, the two candidates for Chief Minister are sitting in front of me. That's Dr. Alex Allanson and Alf Cannon, the Treasury Minister. Dr. Allanson, the Education Minister. So naturally, the subject of education in COVID is worrying a lot of people. I know that I talked to you some weeks ago and you said CO2 monitors were being brought into schools. This was happening, ventilation. We still get, I've got one in front of me. We were promised better classroom monitors. Apart from anything, nothing has happened, et cetera, et cetera. And one phrase was used, children are being thrown to the wolves when you use the word mitigation. What do you say to that?
No, children aren't being thrown to the wolves. I can understand people's concern. We do have a spike in cases. Back on Thursday when I talked to the infection control, we had around about 120 children between the age of 5 and 19, who had developed COVID. This is the unvaccinated population, and what we're seeing here is exactly the same as we're seeing in the UK, that those people who aren't vaccinated are the ones getting COVID. Now, what we're trying to do in terms of schools is support the school community, to support both teachers, staff and students.
But what about these monitors? You said
we have CO2 monitors in classrooms to try to improve the ventilation. If you let me finish, to try to improve ventilation. Ventilation is only one of a whole series of mitigations. We've got increased hygiene measures. We've got we're really strongly recommending the wearing of face masks. And I'll be on the morning programme on Monday reiterating that message. We've also got the message that if you are unwell, please don't come into school. Take a lateral flow test twice a week. And also, if you've got symptoms of COVID, to take a PCR test. We are doing as much as we can to make sure that schools can continue to function. But we have to address the reality that we are still in a global pandemic. And unfortunately, because the UK government did not agree to vaccinate young people until relatively late compared with our European counterparts, we are seeing surges of cases within young people.
So you're not letting schools down, you're not letting parents down, etc., and not doing enough?
I am trying to do as much as possible. I think the Department of Education, Sport and Culture, teachers, head teachers, right the way through the education community, we are trying to do as much as possible to keep schools as safe as possible, but also, really important to stress, keep them open so that we can continue people's education, because we saw quite graphically last year that if young people are deprived of their education, not only the issues that causes for their learning, but the overall well-being issues it causes and the mental health issues it causes. So we are committed to keeping our schools open, but to keep them as safe as possible. But we need the buy-in from that. It's not just my responsibility as minister. We need everyone to take responsibility and try to do the right thing, including wearing face coverings when they're in schools.
We're staying with education, but a different topic of it. Nadim Zahrawi in the Conservative Conference said that they were going to put record sums into education. Is Manx education under-supported? Should it have more money?
Well, you will see both from my Chief Minister manifesto, but also my personal manifesto that this election, that I do acknowledge that education funding needs a review, and that we do need to develop out our education system now, both in terms of empowering schools to build better facilities in terms of their environment in which they operate, empowering teachers and head teachers to really push ahead on that front and reduce the central bureaucracy, because I think that's been a real problem over the last few years and a source of real aggravation. But we also need to consider, and I think that whoever is education minister coming forward will need to review the vision for education on this island, and of course around that, I think bring more transparency to us all about where education and how education is performing.
What do you mean by transparency?
Well, I think we need to understand more where we sit in terms of benchmark delivery on this island, understand the levels of attainment and comparative levels of attainment on this island. And we need to ensure, of course, that our schools are functioning. And at the moment, as I set out in my personal manifesto, but issues that I want to discuss both with a future minister, but also with Tim Ward and themselves, is how this can be better enhanced and delivered. And there are areas, and there are areas that we might look to consider, including a better sort of quality assurance in terms of the performance of our schools. But the issues you've just been talked about, for example, is one of the critical issues that we really do need to get to grips with quite quickly in terms of how COVID, for example, has impacted on our schools. How many children potentially are going to need extra support and potentially tuition going forward? And we also need to understand as well what support, for example, teachers now need on the basis of potentially COVID, but also in terms of the way that support, financial support, has been structured over the last decade or so, what they now need to deliver better outcomes.
So if you were Chief Minister, education could hope for quite a lot of money spent on it.
Well, that by my, this is the point, John, that I need to make. This is not an autocratic position. This is a position that needs to be determined and discussed in terms of policies, both with the council and ministers. But my own personal view is that education, the time has come to reinvigorate education, to look at the vision for education, to look at how we empower schools and teachers to deliver, and to also discuss with future Treasury Minister and broadly around our policy priorities what funding now needs to be allocated to education to deliver on that.
Education Minister, obviously you've got a bit of a grumbling going on with some of the unions at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, just to take up those points, we've got a five-year strategy that was presented to Tim Ward, showing the vision for education, showing the way forward, but actually reviewing that with the people who work in education, with the staff and with the teachers, and or importantly, the parents, in terms of where we want to go forward. In terms of benchmarking, I've always been very much against league tables in terms of performance for exams, but very much for looking at the progress and the destinations of people. How many of our young people get to university, but more importantly, how many get into jobs through vocational training and skills? When we're looking at the overall budget for education, yes, we need more money. I came to Minister Kennan fairly recently in terms of additional educational needs, and you absolutely supported the injection of new funds for it. We do need new funding, but we need to make sure that we bring along all the people involved. I mean, education is not just learning. If we're going to look at economic redevelopment, economic regeneration, we are moving towards a knowledge-based economy. And so education and lifelong learning has to be key to that economic policy.
One of the phrases you use in your manifestos, I think, going back, is a time to deliver, Mr. Cannon. Is one of the problems of a five-year government that they overpromise and underdeliver? It happens all the time. Would it not be better to actually physically make the effort to underpromise and then actually deliver everything that you promised?
Well, I think one of the mistakes potentially that was made by the last administration was to take on too much. When you look at the collation of the programme for government, there was a huge amount in that, and of course. That has been compounded, I think, by a large extent by also the complications around COVID. That's why, you know, I've tried to refocus this by calling for an island plan rather than a programme for government as the lead document, so that we really focus, you know, on from a plan perspective in terms of our priorities and what we are seeking to deliver. Because, you know, when you go out and when you talk to people on the ground, their priorities are not being met in so many areas. For example, a holistic and socially inclusive transport strategy that encompasses the whole island. For example, the fact that many of our roads are falling into serious state of disrepair, that the pavements alongside, that some of our the side issues around hedge cutting and maintenance and making the island somewhere to be proud of are now becoming an area of serious concern. But if you're going to deliver on all these, you know, first of all, you need to set clearly out your priorities. Secondly, you've got to align your budget in terms of focus in order to be sure that these are the key priorities politically and that they are also the key priorities from a delivery perspective. And you also have to accept that you cannot be all things to all people. And that is why, you know, again, in the manifesto, I have set out a warning that if we determine new policy areas, new areas for investments, then there will have to be a serious consideration going to other areas of readjustment across government, because this is not just about being all things to all people, getting a bigger and bigger government. We have to be more targeted, we have to be more focused, and we have to be more realistic. But we need to deliver much more, particularly when it comes to infrastructure, on the basics for this island, rather than get distracted by grand schemes.
Like Kennedy said, we'd be on the moon by the end of the 60s, to actually say, in 5 years' time, we will have done that, and actually, in 5 years' time, be able to say, we did do that.
Well, I think there are many areas across government, actually, to be fair, John, where these things are being met, but let's not be under any illusions that governance and governing in across a multitude of disciplines and areas and services is not a complex matter, and particularly when we are facing the key issues of the day at the moment for this administration going into it: the inflation, the gas supply issues, the food supply issues. You know, so all these are key matters that need to be addressed. But in order to do that, you have to set out a framework for it to be better, for delivery to be better influenced, and to be done in a more constructive way, but also a more transparent way. And that's what I've set out in this manifesto in terms of what we need to think about as a government that delivers for the people of this island.
You mentioned energy there. Obviously, there's a big vote coming up in Tynwald on gas coming up, 27.5% increase, doing away with the cap that was decided last year, Dr. Allenson. Will you be voting for that?
I'll answer that question. I'll just come back to this idea of a programme for government. I think we need a programme for government, but I would agree that it has to be outcomes-based and has to deliver. One of the problems we had with the last administration, I'm afraid, was that we had a programme for government which was unwieldy, which was too big, and which was not communicated or understood by the vast majority of people, including parliamentarians. When Minister Cannon talks about transport policy, one of the problems we have with our bus system at the moment is over £1 million was taken from their budget due to the SAVE programme, which was meant to save 20 million, but only delivered about five, if that. When we talk about infrastructure costs and the state of our roads, that was because the DIY budget was cut back again and again and had to rely upon vehicle excise to actually fund the infrastructure. We need to get the housekeeping right. We need to invest in our infrastructure. We need to deal with climate change, but also intergenerational fairness.
Mr. Cannon suggests breaking the DIY down into a small chunks. Do you think that's a good idea?
Well, we need operationally delivery units with the DIY. I mean, Mr. Cannon in his manifesto talks about a whole range of things, a policy and strategy unit, a COVID response group, an economic development board, having a new minister for housing and committees. What we need to do actually is make the way we run government at the moment more effective. And I am a little bit concerned that a lot of these new groups that the Minister Cannon is talking about as Chief Minister bringing in are coming into the Cabinet Office again. We've seen very much a centralisation of control and power within the Cabinet Office, which is run by the Chief Minister, but also involves the Chief Secretary. If we're going to have an open and democratic government, we need to make sure that that power, if it is centralised, is actually democratically accountable and properly resourced. Because if we're going to deliver on some of these important issues, we need to make sure that the people are there, but also the budgets are there as well.
It sounds as if you create, Mr Cannon, more of these bodies, you can create more of the silos that have been so plaguing government over the last few decades.
Well, no, I mean, again, John, I go back to delivery. I mean, this is why I have set out very clearly in my manifesto how government can go about delivering for the people. For example, I've clearly stated that housing is a big issue for this island, that we do need to think about defining that. That is why I absolutely recognise we need to pull housing out of the DOI. I think we also need to pull the local government matters out of the DOI. We need to put that under the response of a housing and communities minister. But the point is of having a policy and strategy unit in the centre is that we do need to coordinate across government. Alex has got to realise that government in as a standalone structure, that what he's proposing is no reform at all to government delivery. And we're just going to end up with the same old, unless we really do set out very clearly how things can be structured to better deliver for our people. So take housing, for example. There's a crisis at the moment. We have got first-time buyers unable to get onto the housing ladder. We have got costs escalating. We've got anecdotal evidence of large investment firms and individuals coming and buying multitudes of houses. These matters need to be resolved, but they're not going to be resolved within the DOI. That's why we need to bring it out into the centre. But we've also got to have the political will to deliver. That's why I've called it one government, because it's not so much about single legal entities and all the paraphernalia that comes with that. That is about political will to govern. And when I build a council of ministers, if I get elected, then I'm going to do so with the recognition from the ministers that this there has to be some central coordination of policy across government, and then we need to set out an island plan for delivery. And one final point, John, you know, when you start talking about costings and government's finances, you know, if you don't get a grip of it, if you don't set out a five-year financial plan, which I do, if you do not align that with the policies that you're doing at the beginning, then we will run into serious trouble. So that's the critical point. And the second point that Alex raises, which I need to address, you know, when you're looking at substantial savings, which we did in the last administration, and yes, the SAVE programme did suggest a number of ideas that were rejected either by the council of ministers or by the politicians.
Was it a failure?
Then where we made up substantially for that, we increased the economic growth for this island. And I'll tell you how we did that. We did that by putting more money back into people's pockets. We did that by raising personal allowances. We did that by increasing targeted benefits such as child benefit. And we created the opportunity for people to succeed. We weren't feeding them money. We created the framework
for people to move
forward. Can I just
ask you, for people listening who want to buy a house, want to get on the housing ladder, what would you say is a reasonable amount to pay for a house for these young people who they would think, yes, I can afford that? That figure.
Well, John, I'm not going to sort of determine what I think is a reasonable figure. You know, the market is the market.
But that would be the level, the government, wouldn't it, that people would be saying, we can't afford.
Yeah, but of course it is. I mean, there has to be some sort of framework around that, and the levels at the moment are just too low. So we've got to readjust that within the housing market. That appears to be indicating that the average price of a house is pushing close to £300,000.
£313,000, I think.
That is. You know, too far removed from the starting and sort of middle income salaries that people are receiving today, so that we have to bring some framework around that to control that. But we've also got other issues that we need to resolve. So coming to conclusions, requires a multi-layered approach, and that's why a Housing and Communities Minister or Board will be cross-government to deliver the solution.
What you've suggested, Dr. Allenson, a Deputy Minister taking charge after a comprehensive housing strategy. Is that the way you see it?
Well, we've got a housing strategy in play at the moment, which hopefully we'll be delivering.
It's not
the
delivering,
next couple
of though,
months.
Is it?
No, it will be delivering the ideas of how we move forward, because what we need to do, if we're going to tackle housing, it's not just building houses, it has to be linked to a complete reform of the planning on this island as well. So we build houses for the right people in the right places at the right time. We do need to address...
At the right price, obviously.
Absolutely. But what is that right price? You talk about how much should a house
be. I've heard it suggested that between 200 and 250,000 younger people looking to raise families would think that's just about doable. 300 to 350,000 out of our reach.
You're completely correct. It's just about doable because they have the income to be able to afford it, because they can get the mortgage, and because they may be able to save for a deposit. But what we need to do is address the wage stagnation we've had since 2009 on this island. We need to actually promote people to be able to earn more money through their employment. And then we also, as a government, need to be able to give them a hand up in terms of buying their own home through things like a mortgage deposit guarantee scheme, whereby government can actually help them get onto the property ladder. What we need also to do is make sure, when we talk about property ladders, we are not fueling increased prices and speculators. So we need to actually really emphasise the role of owner-occupiers now, perhaps by doing things imaginatively to make sure that new homes are not bought up by people who just want to buy them to let out.
Just a quick one before we go to a break, Mr. Cannon. I heard it suggested that some form of capital gains tax should be imposed on people who come across and buy houses, don't live in them, but just use them for investment.
Well, just to pick up, I mean, first of all, I mean, if Alex thinks the existing policy document, strategy document, is acceptable in the current circumstances for housing, then, you know, I respectfully disagree. It's just not holistic. It's not cohesive, and it needs to be. Exactly. Where is it? So it needs a proper refreshed approach when it comes to housing policy on this island, and we need to see that in writing. We need to see that from a Housing and Communities Minister.
And
when you talk about, you know, taxation, John, I mean, yes, you might have to look. This is the point. You know, I don't necessarily pretend to have all the answers, but, you know, what we have to stop is speculative investment on this island, which is detrimental to progress for our people, for our workers, and for local residents. So if something like that is a necessary bar to this off-island investment coming in, then it should be considered. But just broadly on that, you know, we as an island are actually potentially in quite a good position post-COVID in terms of the state of our finances. We actually need to seek the opportunities to move forward now, and substantial raising of taxation with uncosted island plans or with, you know, policies that actually harm people rather than allow for progress would be a fundamental mistake.
Just finally with you, Dr. Allenson, do you think some form of tax, though, on these things to deter people?
I don't think tax is a dirty word. I think a lot of people on this island would pay more tax, as long as it was fair, if they found it was ring-fenced for health and social care. So when we're reviewing national insurance contributions, we need to be absolutely careful that we don't overtax those people on low incomes, those working families who we are dependent on to drive the economy forward. I see no problems with completely reviewing the national insurance scheme, but making sure we target the top income earners, and also looking, if necessary, at a wealth tax.
The Nation Station, Manx Radio.
You're listening to an afternoon programme here, which is looking ahead to the election of a Chief Minister in the Isle of Man. On Tuesday, they start the process because the two candidates who've been nominated would have to get, one of them will have to get 13 votes. If not, then more nominations will be called for. So this process has started, very interestingly, in the last hour. I've been talking to Alf Cannon and also to Dr. Alex Allenson about a number of issues. One we haven't touched upon is care. Now, of course, we have Manx Care operating at the moment. I'll put the question to you, Dr. Allenson. Is it working?
I think the jury's still out. Manx Care have just started, really, in terms of health transformation. I think they need more time to embed. I think they need more time to develop the operational delivery of healthcare. But again, healthcare, what happens at Nobles Hospital and GP surgeries, is just one part of a much wider system, as you've said, about health and social care. So we're talking about the benefit system. We're talking about elderly people. We're talking about young people and children as well. We're talking about preschool education. And all of this needs to be tackled, needs to be dealt with if we are going to drive the economy forward.
If it's a work in progress, is it heading towards somewhere? Do you think it's going
Absolutely.
To deliver?
Absolutely. I hope it will deliver. Again, the whole idea of Manx Care was an arm's length delivery body. We're going to see how that actually delivers, with a range of different outcomes that they're going to tackle in terms of their charter. For instance, waiting lists. For instance, urgent cancer treatment times. I hope they can achieve that. If they don't, then we need that political scrutiny to actually step in and improve the situation.
It was suggested, Mr. Cannon, during the week by someone on a doorstep that the Isle of Man's health service would be in special measures if it was across the water. I suppose the fact that it used to come to Timbal virtually every year and saying we need more and more millions would actually qualify it for that, wouldn't it?
Well, if we impose wealth taxes, the health service is really going to run short of funding, because there won't be many people left here to actually create the economy to provide the funding for healthcare. But look, you know, when it comes to healthcare, it perennially beset for the last decade, since I came into politics anyway, with a number of critical issues around delivery. And around costs. And the reason why we asked for the Sir Jonathan Michael report really was continual overspends from health. And because I think we all, and Timbal voted alongside, you know, the proposition, was because we all wanted to understand what was the true cost of delivering healthcare and how we went about improving things. Well, Manx Care has only just been in operation since April. It's come in on the back of a COVID healthcare crisis, and it has a funding plan in front of it, which requires us to deliver more funding for health. We've all recognised, I don't think there's a vast disparate gap between Alex and myself that we don't recognise that healthcare plays a fundamental role. But, you know, it's all right throwing more money at it. What we found in the past, you can throw money at health till the cows come home and nothing actually improves. So we've really got to get from Manx Care now the recognition of, one, what we need to do to solve the waiting list crisis. And I think we need to do that because we need to give that organisation some room to breathe and to bring the best out of it. So I think the critical issue, and I think the first issue we need to address with Manx Care, is how to try and solve this extended waiting list issue. And it is serious.
Is that the priority, Dr. Allison?
And then we can move forward.
It's provision of services right the way across the board. It's waiting lists, not just in terms of hospital appointments, but also GP appointments as well. So it goes far wider than just what happens at Nobles. It goes to Ramsay College Hospital. It goes to all the GP surgeries. What we need is an effective healthcare system that's reactive, but also proactive. And we need to bring in the whole idea of holistic health into that. I'm using the public health department.
Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining on what is a gorgeous autumn afternoon, taking the time to come in. I hope listeners out there will have gleaned what they need to make up their minds about which of these two gentlemen may or may not meet the Chief Minister. We don't know. On Tuesday, the process starts, but it's not over then, because if 13 votes are not achieved, then we could have fresh nominations. We'll have to wait and see. I'm John Moss. Hope you've enjoyed the programme. A very good afternoon to you. Let's go down now and join Simon Richardson with the news.